world's yearling sale. Make plans for the Keeneland September Yearling Sale, September 13th through the 24th. Visit theworldsyearlingsale.com to learn more.
Good morning. It is 9:13, Wednesday, August 25th. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News. And it's only been 2 preseason games, but I'm feeling pretty good about my beautiful young quarterback.
We shall see how the Jets will fare in this season. I'm Bill Finley. I'm a correspondent for the Thoroughbred Daily News. Gratuitous plug. My SiriusXM show, Down the Stretch, is back live now, 10 to 1 every Saturday morning on Channel 211 after being stuck in COVID hell for 17 months.
Very nice, Bill. Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable. And Bill, I actually owe you an apology because last week when we did our 100th show, you gave us a very heartfelt story about how the first time you were at Saratoga 50 years prior to that, and I kind of peed all over your Cheerios, and I do apologize. I actually spent last night looking up the winner circle picture of Secretariat in the Sanford, and that's actually the winner circle picture.
Oh, my goodness.
The Sanford.
Well, wait, because right here, you see where the crowd is?
Yes.
Okay, so through technology, I had Patty and her crew kind of pull that out and repixelate and pull it out and repixelate. And Joe, to your point, there is an 8-year-old Bill.
Adorable.
There's an 8-year-old Bill with the lollipop and he wants to be in the press. And that actually comes from right here. You'd be surprised. So
who's the dude with the long hair there?
Don't deflect.
Yeah, okay.
We're still on you and how adorable you look. And look, it's the same haircut as you have now.
You put way too much effort into this.
Oh my God. Yeah. You have no idea. I was up at midnight trying to find it, but thanks to Patty and her crew, they actually found you in the crowd.
There you go.
You know, and it was between this outfit, the Red Sox, your beloved Red Sox, which ironically enough, you're still wearing a Red Sox shirt. It may be the same one for all we know.
He still needs a lolly before he'll do any show.
Exactly. It reminded me when I asked who won the 1972 Sanford, your original answer was Man of War.
Man of War, right. Yes. And I was actually, last night I was looking at the Man of War pictures. They don't have pictures back then because they didn't have talkies back then, all right? But yes, but Bill, there is living proof that Bill Finley was actually really there at the Sanford.
What a collector's item. Yeah. You got to frame that.
We'll put it on eBay.
Put it up on the wall over here. That's amazing.
What I do in my spare time.
It's crazy. Which obviously you have way too much of.
This is why we don't have a real job. Spends his days photoshopping Bill with a lolly.
Like literally photoshopping. Like I literally, you know, Patty goes, you know, you can do that online. I'm like, I know. I'm old school though. I want to cut and paste. Exactly.
The TDN Writers Room is presented by Keeneland, home of the world's yearling sale. Make plans to attend the Keeneland September Yearling Sale beginning Monday, September 13th. The catalog is now available at theworldsyearlingsale.com. Just a couple of notes. 54 yearlings out of grade one winners will be featured at Keeneland September. Dams include Champions Day at the Spa, Take Charge Brandy, Unique Bella, DeCita, plus Kentucky Oaks winners Believe You Can and Catherine Sophia. Also, there's a couple of supplements of note. 399B, Hip 399B is a half sister to Nick's Go, who we just saw blow out the Whitney Stakes and is probably going to be the favorite for Horse of the Year, or at least older male. And it's from the first crop of Justify. That Hip 399B and Hip 399A is a Medaglia d'Oro half brother to Drayfong. Remember him? He was a very, very sharp sprinter for the Chews and Bob Baffert. John's got the catalog, and it's not just a prop. John is actually thumbing through this catalog during breaks.
I was flipping through it, and it's really amazing because, you know, you see the usual suspects. You see Into Mischiefs, you see Gun Runners, you see Medaglia d'Oros. But what I'm really excited about is there's almost 30 Justifies that are selling in book one alone.
Wow.
And starting off with Hip number one, Justify out of I Bet Tony Knows. I mean, so you're going to know exactly where what the market thinks of Justifies on Hip number one of 4,000 horses.
Yep. Well, looking forward to it. It's less than a month away. All right. So we had a pretty good weekend of racing. We had the main two races that I think were on most people's menu that week to bet and watch were the Pacific Classic and Alabama. I mean, Alabama, not a great betting race, I guess, with Malathot as a prohibitive favorite in there. But I thought, you know, she, as someone who has been critical of her schedule and will continue to be, because, you know, they were already saying after the race that she's not going to run again until the Distaff, which I think is a little crazy. There are grade one races for fillies and mares in between now and then. Nevertheless, which one thing that's very admirable about her is the way she shows up every time and kind of the way that Essential Quality does. I think that she's like an interesting analog to him that, know, she stumbled a little bit coming out of the gate this time. She had to trail the field early, and then she moved up a little bit down the backstretch. Had to go wide on both turns, and she grinds it out. She gets it done. You know, if you want to say this isn't the greatest crop of three-year-old fillies we've ever seen, I would agree with you. She only got a 95 buyer. But nevertheless, she is just she's a war horse, I think, that she just shows up every single time and finds a way to get the job done. She's basically, you know, one nose away from being undefeated in her career. And I think she's locked up three-year-old filly champion now. She's got three grade ones. She's got the Kentucky Oaks. I don't see any way that anyone could overtake her between now and the end of the year, which is probably why they don't feel compelled to run her before the distaff. Nevertheless, I thought it was a nice performance by her at Tripoli in the Pacific Classic. I don't know. It was, once Dr. Post didn't show up in that race, I felt like it lost a little bit of its luster. And, you know, you had two of the top three horses from the San Diego battling down the stretch. Tripoli has come along pretty nicely. He was basically a turf horse his whole career. Until the last couple of races, he's run really well on dirt. So John Sadler's done a good job with him. By Kitten's Joy. So it wasn't like it was obvious to try this horse on dirt all along, but you know, it's worked out for him. And it was interesting that Tiago Pereira only rode that race that day. That was, I never heard about that. I never heard of that, just to focus on that one race. But those are the main two results for me. I have a couple more I want to get to, but I'll toss it to Bill.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And the other highlight to me, maybe you were going to say this, I thought Mo Forza, yep, winning the Del Mar Mile, first start since October 3rd of last year. Obviously he's sharp and back and is going to be a candidate for the Breeders' Cup Mile. Joe, I pretty much agree with everything you said. You know, Malathat is what she is. And I, afterwards, there were some people on Twitter say, "Oh, she ought to take on the boys." And like, no, I mean, come on, she's the best 3-year-old filly of what I would agree with you is a, you know, maybe just a pedestrian lot. She is kind of, you know, when I described essential quality as a grinder, and again, that's not, folks, a negative term. It's just how the style they win. She's like that as well. I thought some of the pre-race interviews with Richard Migliori and John Velasquez talking about that, you heard right before the race how, you know, you really got to get after her. You got to let her know that it's time to go. And she gets the job done. You know, of course, I agree with 1,000%. I mean, she should be running five times between now and the Breeders' Cup, which is what horses actually used to do in the day, you know, not all that long ago. But, you know, it's everybody's drank the Kool-Aid. There's no going back now. You know, we're lucky. She's run. She'll have two races between the Kentucky Oaks and the Breeders' Cup. I just shake my head. The other thing about Tripoli that I'll add is, you know, John Sadler, to me, was the story here. He is so good with these kinds of horses. The horse had 12 career starts and hadn't even run in a stakes race, and then goes in the San Diego and then goes in the Pacific Classic. First stakes win comes in the Pacific Classic for the last 5 years for Sadler. His horses take their time to get good. But we see this over and over and over again. I mean, horses that when they're three or maybe even two, you think, this horse is just, nothing's going to really, they're just another horse. And then lo and behold, they get to this age and this point in their career. And, you know, again, he's no superstar, but he's now grade one winner. And I think Sadler has a lot to do with that. I loved Royal Ship in that race. I was very disappointed in him. And Express Train, another one, didn't run much at all. So it was kind of a strange race.
Yeah, and you guys hit on the major races, so I'm going to go a little bit offbeat and talk about, you know, a stake race, the Summer Colony, which was for fillies and mares that had never won a graded stake race in the current calendar year. And Horologist just went gate to wire and just looked so impressive in that race. And I know she didn't run against any great shakes, especially once Dunbar Road scratched out of the race. But she's just a nice old mare and a Jersey bred, which is why I think she's near and dear to my heart. But now she's racked up, you know, well over $800,000 in earnings. And it's just nice to see because, you know, there's a horse that used to be trained by John Mazza before he passed away. And the owner continually, every time the horse wins, you know, gives an homage to the previous trainer and thanks him, you know, for bringing this filly into the barn. So that was just nice to see. You know, she ran an 88 buyer, which was fine. You know, it was a nice prep for her to kind of get on the winning ways again and
Horologist? Start back up.
Horologist.
She got 100.
No, it was 88.
Damn, I'm looking at the wrong thing.
Yeah, yeah, no. Wow. Yeah, 88 buyer.
Right, she won by so much. I thought it was it would be higher.
And, you know, she won by almost 9 lengths in a hand ride, you know, from beginning to end. It wasn't even in question. But it's just nice to see a horse like that goes on. And you know, she'll be pointed, I'm sure, for the Breeders' Cup fillies and mares to run against some of the big girls like Malathot that we're talking about, and Clairiere and Army Wife, et cetera. I think that was a good decision to put her in a race like this, take advantage of the way the race was written, and go off at even money and show why you're an even money horse. I know we're going to talk a little bit about Safe Conduct, so I don't want to steal anyone's thunder on that. I have some thoughts on that. And while we're staying north of the border, we actually ran in the Highlander in the Grade One, and our big concern going into the race was Caravelle, and she was like 1-5 in the race. And not only did Caravelle run poorly, we ran poorly also, and it set it up for Silent Poet, who was just an old hard-knocking horse that's now run 22 times and won 11 of them. And, you know, an old Stronach horse he ran a 98 buyer. But for a trainer, Nicholas Gonzalez, that had not won a race the entire year and jumps up and wins a Grade One to break the schneid. So I thought that was an interesting story as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, there are a lot of cool horses like that, I feel like, in Canada that just stick around and hard-knocking win machines. I think Mark Cassie's horse, Super Stonehenge, is starting to turn into that. Now he's kind of taking the mantle from Pink Lloyd in that way. But, yeah, you know, just a couple other horses I wanted to mention. You know, Bill brought up Mo Forza. I thought that was very impressive, and especially because it was off the layoff, and you have to figure he was not totally cranked for that race. He didn't get off all that great. He kind of, you know, made this one grinding run and ran down a pretty nice horse in Smooth Like Straight, who was not stopping. He really reeled him in. So that's a very, very interesting horse. And I think, you know, unless I'm forgetting somebody, that's the best American Hope in the mile, as far as I'm concerned, especially considering that you expect him to move forward off of that race. Also Code of Honor had a big win in the Islin, got a 105 buyer, definitely his best race in a while. We'll see. Then maybe they'll try a little quick turnaround in the Jockey Club Gold Cup, but maybe they'll point to something else. And then, you know, like you said, up north of the border, you know, Safe Conduct was a really cool win. And I did a story. I don't usually plug my stuff, but I did a story on Phil Serpy yesterday and just kind of how big of a win that was for him. You know, this being only his third win of the year. You know, in fact, his second win was like a week or two ago in a maiden race at Saratoga with this horse, King Angelo. To have only your third win of the year and for it to be the Queen's Plate is a pretty big deal. And he talked a lot about, you know, the increasing consolidation on the backstretch and the monopolization going on, and how he's lost, you know, the Bromans don't race nearly as much as they used to. Yeah, he used to train for Flying Z Stable. Carl Liz obviously died in the last 10 years and they had to disperse their stock. So it's harder for him now to compete with these huge stables of high-priced yearling and two-year-old purchases and private purchases. So I suggest checking it out. He kind of unprompted just spilled his guts about all of the kind of the issues with the industry in terms of squeezing out the small trainers. So I definitely would check that out. But yeah, Safe Conduct, a very likable horse, overachieving, $45,000 weanling buy. He actually ran a really good race. He got a great trip under Irad Ortiz. Got him out from that rail, got him in the clear for the stalking two-path trip. But if you look at the race, the pace, other than him, fell apart. All the other horses that were second, third, fourth, and fifth closed from well back in the pack. And I think the second, third, and fourth horses early were like 10th, 12th, and 13th or something like that. So he ran a really good race. He's probably not going to go in the Prince of Wales. He's not a dirt horse. His two dirt races have not been good. But Serby said he's going to ship him back up, most likely for the Breeder Stakes, which is the third leg of the Canadian Triple Crown, which is on turf. I think it's a mile and a half.
It's a long race. It's very far. It's a marathon. Yeah.
So that's at the beginning of October. So yeah, those are cool results. We always like to see the little guys get big wins because, you know, it just plainly means more to them and their bottom line and their stables health and long-term success. So that was a cool result overall. Some interesting results from the weekend, but I think this weekend coming up, and we're going to get to it, the Travers card is going to be a absolute blockbuster, star-studded day of racing. We'll get to it a little later after this message from Keeneland.
Take part in the Keeneland November experience this fall. Entry deadline for the Keeneland November sale is Monday, August 2nd. Learn more at november.keeneland.com.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Spendthrift Farm. Obviously, it was a very sad week in the world of Spendthrift and just in the world of racing in general, losing B. Wayne Hughes. Well, we're going to get into his life and his legacy in a little bit. We're going to do a whole segment on it. But on the track, Into Mischief had a couple of TDN Rising Stars on Saturday. Seems like a broken record. Ain't Easy, who's a legacy grad, sponsorship crossover at Del Mar. And My Prankster at Saratoga, who was incredible. We didn't bring him up in the recap, but he was very, very impressive. Todd Pletcher had a couple of nice two-year-olds, but My Prankster especially, very impressive TDN Rising Star. And he just joined Tappet and Giants Causeway as the fastest ever in North America to reach the $100 million milestone for a sire, which is incredible. And I just wanted to hat tip, first of all, to Katie for finding this, but also to Alan Carrasso, who had a tweet earlier this week. Between them, Into Mischief and the late Malibu Moon from Spendthrift have a combined 49 TDN Rising Stars. That is an incredible stat. And obviously with Into Mischief, that number is only going to grow exponentially. So my story on safe conduct, I think it blew up a little bit because it has like 7 retweets and 20 likes, but no, it's I think it resonated because of the stuff that Phil Serpy was talking about, something we talk about on the show, something that's on the mind of a lot of smaller trainers and them getting squeezed out of the game. But I know Bill and John have some thoughts on this too.
Yeah, I mean, he did make some good points in there. I think Phil Serpy is a very competent trainer who, there's no reason why he should have been going into the Queen's Plate with the 2 wins on the year, but he's not alone. As he said, I mean, there are dozens and dozens and dozens of guys in his shoes, to the point where I actually wonder how somebody like in that situation actually makes a living, winning 3 or 4 races a year. But the problem with this is, what do you do about it? You know, you can't go to Seth Klarman and say, Seth, you have 80 horses. You can only give 40 to Chad Brown. You have to spread the other 40 around among other trainers. I mean, it's still, this is a capitalistic system. And there's, any kind of artificial caps you would put into this would be probably illegal to begin with, as well as stall limitations. I mean, that's the one thing that has changed. John, you remember back in the day, a guy had 35 stalls and that was it. No having, 75 horses here and another 75 at this place and another 75 at that place. But that ship has sailed. We're not going back to that. So while I am sympathetic to what he said, I really don't see how this is ever going to change. And it's a big bad world out there,
And I can't believe I'm saying this, but Bill, I agree with you 100%. I really thought you were going to go in the other direction, and I was all getting some information together as to the problem with what Phil said. The underlying theme of super trainers are, taking over the industry and this is going to be the end of the world. Take out super trainer and put in Amazon, put in other big business. And that's what the mom and pop, businesses of the world have always been railing against. And I understand that because I before I did this, I started my own business with no clients and no money under management. And you have to build and build. And people would always come back and say, well, I have my accounts with Morgan Stanley or Bear Stearns or fill in the blank. Why should I go with a small boutique operation like yours? And you had to prove why you were better or why you were better for that person, at least. And Phil, I'm going to talk to you directly. If you're listening to this podcast, nothing made me happier than seeing an old Monmouth trainer win a grade one like this. That was awesome. It was great. It was, it's a feather in your cap. It's your third grade one of your career, and you should be really, really proud of it. But if you want to...
It's not a grade one.
It's not even graded.
It's not graded.
It's a state anyway,
I'm sorry.
Race.
It's whatever.
I'm sorry.
It's a million dollar race. Excuse me. It's a $1 million race, and you should be very, very proud of it. But the bottom line is, if you want new owners, you got to go out and solicit new owners. And if you want new owners and you want to stand on your resume, it can't be that you have a 7% win percentage this year, 11% last year, 12%, 13%, 14%, 7%. And even when you were, in the great days at Monmouth Park, when you would, when you were one of the leading trainers there, your percentages were still 13% win, 18% win, 13% win, and 16% win. So even when you were running 500 horses a year, you weren't winning enough. So you can't rail against people that are winning at a higher percentage and say, you're doing better, because historically that's not true. Now, what you can say is, I'm winning at a, with the best that I have. Or maybe you shift gears and you say, I'm not going to run these major racetracks anymore with these horses. And you go to a racetrack where, you can be a leading trainer, or you can have an opportunity to put horses in the right places. But you can't sit here and say, it's the other guys that are killing me, when you're not winning and you're not doing what's best for yourself, or going out and soliciting them. And maybe you are, but and I don't know about it. But I can tell you that other smaller trainers, and I'll use Jim Bond as an example, who also has a long resume and has won major races throughout his career. They went ahead and they started advertising on TVG. And you know what? In talking to Tina and Jim Bond, they have a lot of owners now that are getting, they're getting recognition for that. And a lot of owners are coming to them now and starting stables and starting their relationships with those type of trainers. So this is a great opportunity for you to springboard and be able to say to people, I just want a $1 million race out of town. And that's what you should be promoting, not the other guys who are bigger than me are suffocating me because they have more horses. That may be true, but then instead of complaining about it, go out to their 8th, 9th, 10th best owner and start telling them why you're a better fit for those owners.
Well, I mean, that's kind of what he was trying to do in this story. Because like I said, I called him just basically to do a story on a nice, Ontario bred horse from a small New York trainer that went up and won the Queen's Plate. I mean, most of this stuff was kind of unprompted, which I think made it interesting. I kind of feel two ways about it. I agree with him that it's not good for the game to keep having this constant, snowballing consolidation in only a handful of trainers' barns. And he's also right that even if a guy who's winning at 7% doesn't mean he's completely incompetent. Like, there are circumstances and he can still get a good horse to win a big race. Like, there are so many people at that, men and women, guys and gals on the backstretch who can do this kind of stuff, and they just aren't afforded the opportunity. And it really hit home for me more so in recent times with like the Baffert stuff, because it's like, you let this guy get so powerful and have so many big horses that he kind of, has the industry over a barrel in terms of cracking down on him. Like, that's obviously an exponential concern. That's a tangential concern. But I think that is the kind of stuff that consolidation leads to. And he's right that if you have the 9th or 10th best one other than allowance horse in Todd Pletcher's bar and say, you're not going to be on the racetrack for a little bit. But I agree with John too, that this should be an opportunity for him to tell the world and to show the world that he can run a good horse in a big race and get the money. And I agree that this could and should be a springboard for him. And I don't know, I can see both sides of it, because I do think consolidation is a big problem, but it's not like incumbent on the big guys to feel sorry for Phil Serpy. Like, their job is to make money for the owners that they have. And if some of those owners are dissatisfied, then maybe they should give guys like Phil Serpy and smaller trainers a shot. So I thought it was an interesting story because that stuff was kind of unprompted by him and just kind of came out and spilled out. And I get it. Like, he's never been like a top trainer, like John's saying, but he's been able to make a living like throughout his career. And it just last year, his horses made $40,000 or $400,000, which 10% of that is $40,000. Like, before the day rate, that's not enough to live on and pay a staff and a stable. And I don't think you want a future where there's only 5 or 6 trainers who have every horse on the Belmont backstretch. But this is definitely, like John says, this is an opportunity for the Phil Serpys of the world to, when they get this kind of big horse, to do something with it and to, gather owners around because of it.
And don't shortchange yourself, because as a good journalist, you got him to say those things. You probably asked him the question about it. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't like, hey, congratulations, your win. Yeah, let me tell you about these super trainers and how much they suck.
It wasn't far. No, I mean, I'd asked him about what it means for like a smaller barn to win that kind of race. But yeah, most of it just came out unprompted, and it was a good story. And I just instinctively, I root for guys like that.
Absolutely.
In New York, like, especially in New York, where it's so competitive, guys that I've seen in the entries for a long time who are not incompetent trainers, that to get a big horse like that, it's more innately satisfying than it is, no disrespect to the big guys, to see, Chad Brown win his 30th grade one of the year.
No question about it. I think we're all saying the same thing, that you root for a guy like this, but use it to your advantage. Okay, now.
Totally agree. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business could benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. And some big legacy news actually this week with a big pedigree update for one of their Keeneland September yearlings. We were just talking about Safe Conduct. Hip 2277 at Keeneland September. Keeneland September is an Ontario-bred son of first crop yearling sire collected and is a half-brother to Safe Conduct. And also Ain't Easy, who we mentioned before, Into Mischief, Spendthrift, rising star, was a legacy grad, won her debut by over 5 lengths at Del Mar over the weekend, and was a 400,000 Keeneland September legacy grad, and was bred also by Spendthrift Farm. Whew. Talk about
it's good
crossover.
To be a sponsor.
Exactly.
It is good to be a sponsor. The TDN
These
Writers
marriages are happening more and more every week, and we will definitely take credit for it. We'll be right back after this message from Legacy Bloodstock.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse every step of the way. When it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving up down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
Owning multiple great stakes winning racehorses like Decorated Invader and possible future stars like 14-0, who I'm going to get to, is attainable with a racing partnership with West Point Thoroughbreds. Partnerships enable you to spread your ownership across several horses for less than it costs to own one horse alone. This increases your racetrack action and your chances for a big horse. Learn more about why West Point Thoroughbreds is the gold standard in racing partnerships at westpointtb.com. So I mentioned her just 5 seconds ago. 14-0, who was bet down to 6-5 in her debut Sunday at Saratoga. She's a daughter of Frankel. You don't see too many Frankel daughters in the U.S., or sons for that matter. Cost a pretty penny as a yearling and basically won like she should have. Like the way she was bet, she really was impressive. She was professional. She sat off the pace and was really kicking away in the end. It was a slow pace. It was a weirdly run race over that yielding turf, but she really picked up in the lane and looked great. Christophe Clement trains her, so would definitely expect some big things from her in the future. Jackson Traveler got his second stakes win over the weekend in the start of NASCAR stakes at Pimlico, and Magnolia Midnight, who's a $320,000 OBS April buy, broke his maiden by over 7 lengths last week at Colonial Downs for West Point. So a big weekend for West Point and all the partners, and I think especially 14-0, very, very exciting. And you know, now there's the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies turf. There's a whole plethora of big races to run these 2-year-old turf fillies, and I think we've seen a lot. We saw Dripping Cold for West Point recently. I think we've seen a lot of nice 2-year-old turf performances, and West Point certainly has two of the top ones for sure.
I love the fact that horse's name is 14-0, because that's what was Frankel's record.
I didn't know that. That makes sense. I was looking at the name and trying to suss that out, but yeah, he was
very impressive.
Super superstar.
Yep.
Yeah, so if she's got a fraction of that talent, they're in a good shape for sure. All right, so it was obviously a big story overall in racing, but obviously a huge story to Spendthrift Farm and the Kentucky breeding and stallion industry that B. Wayne Hughes, who was the billionaire businessman and philanthropist who resurrected Spendthrift Farm and really brought it back from the ashes when he bought it. He died Wednesday at his residence on the farm. He was surrounded by his family. He was 87 years old. And, you know, I contributed a little bit to the obit on the TDN website, so you should go read it. He has an amazing story. Like, B. Wayne Hughes is an old school business success. You know, I think that I wrote down some words that I would use to describe him, an innovator too, you know, in racing and in business. If you don't know his story, he co-founded with his partner, Kenneth Volk, Public Storage, which I'm sure you've seen all over America. It's a last count had a $40 billion valuation. It's an enormous, enormous business that he founded and then, you know, used that to go into real estate and then eventually buy Spendthrift Farm and really bring Spendthrift back. Spendthrift is a historic place that stood stallions like Seattle Slough, you know, big time horses over the decades. It had fallen into disrepair and was sold at a bankruptcy auction until he stepped in and he bought it. It was sold in a foreclosure auction in 1993, and he stepped in 2004 and bought it. And basically he used to live in California his whole life, moved to Spendthrift, you know, got in on the ground floor and made it successful. And now obviously it's one of the most successful and really one of the fastest growing, I think, stallion, businesses and farms in America. And yeah, like I said, I think he's an old school business success because he grew up poor. He was the son of a sharecropper who had to flee the Dust Bowl in Oklahoma to move to California. So he grew up poor in California, went to USC, graduated USC. He's given a ton of money back to USC. I think over $400 million, almost all anonymously. It's only come out like because people have done stories and have done investigating on his charitable contributions. And that's the only reason it came to light, how much money he's given away. He's given a lot of money to pediatric cancer research. You know, he was just a guy who did it the hard way and, you know, basically became successful in everything he did and always stayed young at heart, I think, in his innovation and creating things like Share the Upside, investing in My Race Horse, stuff like that, where he transferred his business acumen to racing to try to get more people involved. I think that that was the constant theme in his life, was innovation and just being basically successful at everything he did. And you can't, I don't know, you can't say that for a lot of people, and he will be extremely missed in the thoroughbred racing community, John.
And I know just from talking to him as a breeder, as well as somebody that campaigned one of Cross Traffic's, you know, best horses in Champion Jaywalk. You know, whenever we were running in a big race, there was a representative from Spendthrift there. There was somebody who was out there, you know, supporting us and giving us some insight and also some, just mainly support. And it was nice to see. I would agree with your comments, Joe. He B. Wayne Hughes was very entrepreneurial. He was a risk taker, but he was also smart enough to collect a good team. And I know from Public Storage, he talked about it a lot, and also with Spendthrift, he talked about the importance of just collecting good horses, but also collecting good people. And the people who were there stayed there for a long time, because they had, great opportunities, and B. Wayne Hughes was the leader of that. The other thing I'll say is, we were never fortunate enough to stand a stallion, but a good friend of ours, Chuck Zachney, friend of the show, stands Maximus Mischief. And when I asked him about the process about, why did you go to Spendthrift? He said, I can tell you in one name, and that's B. Wayne Hughes. He said, basically, I know that they're going to support the horse. I know they're going to campaign the horse. They're going to manage him properly. They're going to market him, and they're going to, open up opportunities through some of these, breeding incentivization programs. If he's not, the best horse, then they're going to still stand behind him and make sure that he gets every opportunity possible. Because in the breeding game, that's what you need. You need to have foals on the ground. None of us talk about, if a horse has, like Into Mischief, who has 200 horses every year, we talk about the 20 that win graded stake races. It doesn't mean that the other 190 aren't good, but you still need people to breed to the horse. And I think that's what B. Wayne Hughes brought to the game, is he figured out ways to incentivize smaller breeders, incentivize larger breeders to still go to some of these horses that were unproven and unknown, and just give them an opportunity. And opportunity is all part of entrepreneurial, thinking, and that's what he brought to this game.
Yeah, and he's, a word that a lot of people like to use these days is disruptor. And I think he was a disruptor to the stallion business because of those programs like Share the Upside. And he kind of had to do that because, relatively speaking, he bought the farm in 2004. Relatively speaking, he was a new kid on the block in that business. And he kind of had to do that to get groundswell and to get attention. And look, it's turned into one of the fastest growing stallion farms in America. Every single year, they have more and more marquee stallions that you want to breed to. And I don't want to slight the racing operation too. Obviously, we remember Beholder was his big time horse, who was a 3-time champion. And, he mentioned in the obit, Richard Mandela gave some good quotes about how that win in the Pacific Classic was basically B. Wayne Hughes's, that blowout win in the Pacific Classic was one of his finest memories and his finest experiences. Also, another thing about him that, was kind of famous was he was still kind of lived like a middle class life, even though he was a multi-billionaire. There were like famous shots of him going to In-N-Out Burger after Beholder's win in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. So that part was very charming as well. And I think that comes from having that rags to riches story. You never lose sight of where you came from. And I think that was evident in B. Wayne Hughes, the way he conducted his life and ran his business. And I think that he's going to be sorely missed across the industry because of that. But like you said, he does have a great team at Spendthrift, and Ned Toffee and Eric Gustafson, and a lot of really talented and smart men and women who I think are going to carry on his legacy. But he was a giant, and he was kind of a seismic figure in racing, I think, for the last 20 years, and made a lot of impact in a relatively short amount of time. And I just want to mention before we wrap this up that if we can put it on the screen, in lieu of flowers, the family requests donations to the B. Wayne Hughes Fund at UK Healthcare, P.O. Box 34184, Lexington, Kentucky 40588. So rest in peace, B. Wayne Hughes, a true, true icon in racing. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost of trying to do it on your own. Learn more at westpointtb.com. We'll be right back after this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills. Fraction of the bills. Experience the power of the partnership. Change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we're beyond thrilled this week to welcome to the show former top trainer and current top jockey agent, Kieran McLaughlin. Thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We're so glad to have you. And, you know, we wanted to have you on in the past, you know, when you were training, when you had first retired. Obviously things are going well. You know, Rep Luis Saez, he currently has a 10 win lead on Jose Ortiz at the Saratoga Jockey Standings. You know, that's not, it's not locked up entirely, but seems probable that he's going to win that. What's the change in your life been like being a jockey's agent as opposed to being a trainer?
Oh, it's great. I really enjoyed it. He's a great person to work with. I'd like to thank all the owners and trainers out there that have supported us, but it's been fun, a lot of fun and less stress with all the, you know, problems with workman's comp and help and all the things that happen every day, but it's been great and we're doing well and hopefully we can hang on, but there's some great jockeys right behind.
He's riding hard, man. I have been watching him every single day. He hustles for sure, and I'm sure you're hustling for him too, Bill.
Yeah, Kieran, coming into this meet, one of the Ortiz brothers, if there was such a thing as a jockey betting, would have been the favorite for the leading rider. I imagine Luis probably would have been third choice. The Ortiz brothers have combined to win the last six Saratoga titles. So did you see this coming at all? I mean, not only is Luis the leading rider, he's got a fairly comfortable margin. So did you see this coming, and what's making things click so well?
No, I didn't see it coming at all. I mean, we're very pleased to be where we are, and it's just gone well. A lot of things have happened behind the scenes probably that people don't realize, but, you know, like the other day with John Kimmel being on the Also Eligible and George Abreu winning the race by 7 lengths, John Kimmel didn't get in the race, and then a week later, John Kimmel gets in the same race and they both win. And Todd with the main track only the other day might make a scratch. And there's a lot of things that have just happened that have gone well. And Jose and Ira could win 5 any day or twice before the end of the meet. So it's not over, a long way from being over. And there's great riders right there behind us.
Yeah, and Kieran, I think you're being modest because I know you're doing an outstanding job behind the scenes and getting, you know, Louis on as many top horses as possible. And case in point, you know, you look at the upcoming race schedule for the next couple of days at Saratoga, and Saez is on 8 or 9 different horses with 8 or 9 different trainers. So you are working the barn area and certainly the trainers. How do you approach, as a former trainer, how do you approach some of these trainers to get the best mounts possible for Luis?
Well, I do my homework from now. This last couple of weeks here, we were a lot of repeat business from the beginning of the meet, and you're riding horses back. But I get along with everybody, and it's great that a lot of them reach out to me because he's in demand, and I just have to pick from horse A to horse B and hope I get it right. But we do have a nice day Friday with the New York Breds and Saturday, obviously, with the Travers coming.
It's a good segue because I wanted to ask about a Travers past. It's 9 years ago that you and Kenny McPeak dead heated for the win in the Travers with Alpha and Golden Ticket, respectively. Can you just take us back a little bit to that time, and specifically as you were waiting for the photo to come up, can you remember what you were thinking back then?
Yes, I thought we won, and then I thought we lost, and then I was standing next to Kenny McPeak there on the steps, and I was so happy they put up a dead heat because neither one deserved to lose that close a race.
Yeah, and Karen, I want to take you back to, again, a question about training. And earlier in the show, we talked a lot about Malathat and the year that she's had. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but if you had stayed training, I would imagine you would have been the trainer of her as you were the main trainer for Shadwell. I mean, I'm sure you're very happy for the connections. But when you see something like that happen, does that make you miss training a little bit? Or does it make you even for a second say, did I do the right thing here?
No, I definitely did the right thing. I'm very happy doing what I'm doing. And I'm happy for Todd Pletcher, and he's a Hall of Fame trainer. So I might not have done as well with her as he did. And yes, she would have been allocated to me and my staff. But I'm very happy for Shadwell, Todd, Johnny, everybody involved with the film.
And Karen, one of the other graduates was Frosted, and now we're starting to see some of the Frosted juveniles run and develop. When you watch the Frosteds on the racetrack, does it remind you of the horse that made almost $4 million when he was under your in your barn?
Yeah, some of them do. I mean, we have a few of them that we've worked, and we're looking forward still to riding them. They haven't run yet, a couple of them. But it's great to see Frosted doing so well because he was a homebred for Godolphin, a little bit like Essential Quality, and he's done so well, and it was great to have him in the barn, and it's great to see his sire career going so well.
And do you feel like that they have the same mental and physical attributes that Frosted did? Tell us a little bit about Frosted when he was in your barn.
He was a great, mentally great horse by Tappet, because Tappets can be very tricky. He was beautiful confirmation wise. You couldn't really fault him at all. So he was a real star, and I'm glad to see that he's doing well as a stallion.
So I had one more trip down memory lane I'm going to ask you to make to Questing in the Alabama. I mean, she was arguably, to me, at least in my lifetime, the most impressive winner of the Alabama. She won by, I think, double-digit lengths that day. She had been a turf horse most of her career. I think that was the big first win for Irad Ortiz, too, because he was still 19 years old at that time. That was a huge win for him. Can you take us back to that and that kind of pretty much devastating performance in the Alabama, what that was like?
Yeah, it was one of the most impressive victories I had. You talk about Frosted and Questing. Questing, it was like, she's going too fast. You kept thinking 3/4 and 9 and change, and she kept going. And then she was drifting around down the lane. But it was a great win and one of the most impressive wins that I ever had or our team ever had. And so she has a special spot in my heart.
Absolutely. She was incredible.
Hey, Karen, when you announced this change of plans to become a jockey agent, I think one of the things that was so surprising to people was, now we've seen plenty of trainers leave that profession, whether they just retire altogether, become a racing official, go into being a jockey agent, but it's usually guys that are struggling, and you were not struggling. You were one of the top trainers in the country. And what does that say about the training profession that even somebody like Karen McLaughlin had to say, hey, there's a better way of doing this? And what if you could wave your magic wand, what would you do to make the life of a trainer, especially if you're not Chad Brown, Todd Pletcher, Bob Baffert, better for these individuals out there? And some of whom are obviously struggling.
Well, I think that the main reason that I left was the opportunity for Luis Saez. Luis Saez is top rider. So when that opportunity came up, it was just made sense. I just couldn't hardly turn it down. As far as training goes, it's tough with the help. It's very hard to get, I had H-2B visas. It's very expensive, very difficult to do everything right. So I don't have an answer for all the trainers' issues. But when you talk about a top 5 rider in America, being able to work for him, and I was a jocks agent back in 1992 and 1993 for Chris Antley. So I kind of came full circle, went to Dubai when I left Chris and came back to being a jocks agent, leaving Dubai's owners. It's difficult. It was a difficult decision.
Last question for me, Karen. Let's fast forward to November, first weekend out in California, the Breeders' Cup weekend. The over-under on Luis Saez winning Breeders' Cup races is 1.5. Are you taking the over or the under? How many Breeders' Cup wins do you think he's going to have? Over 1.5 or under 1.5?
That's a very good question. I hope over, but I'd be happy to win one. So that would be Hopefully we can win one.
Well, he certainly lined him up well for the rest of the year. We miss seeing you in the entry box, but we're glad that you're doing well and that Luis is doing well this summer. Thanks so much for coming on, Kieran.
Thank you,
Jerry. Thank you for having me. Thanks a lot.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Kieran McLaughlin will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
So I alluded to this when we were talking about last weekend's races, which was a nice weekend of racing, but this Saturday is big boy racing central, the Saratoga Traverse card. You know, I gotta give it to Naira. These huge grade one cards have really, really, you know, spice things up and made for these big days just to feel so electric and you know, have such anticipation for them. I used to like spacing out the gray ones anymore. I'm sold. Put them all on one card once a year for all, run it for 24 hours. But obviously the headliner is the Run Happy Travers. It's $1.25 million. Thought it was going to get a little bit bigger field. Looks like it's going to get 7 horses, Essential Quality, Dynamic One, Mask Parade, Keep Me In Mind, Miles D, Midnight Bourbon, and King Fury. So, I mean, that's an okay field. Obviously, Essential Quality is going to be a heavy, heavy favorite for Luis Saez after we just spoke to Kieran. Dynamic One, I think, is interesting because he's getting a little bit better. I think he's finally starting to grow into that big frame of his. So I think 1.25 miles, even though it didn't work out in the Derbies, I would give him another shot in the Travers. But not a great betting race, but obviously you're Essential Quality is appointment viewing. But how about the personal Ensign, Swiss Skydiver against Latruska? Like, we've been waiting for that matchup for a little bit now. Bonnie South is in there. Royal Flag, who won the Shoe V, who beat Horologist, who John talked about before. Harvey's Little Goyle, friend of the show, mascot of the show, is in there as well. And the H. Allen Jerkins is not going to be a huge field, but it's going to have, theoretically, Following C, Jackie's Warrior, and Life is Good. I mean, I can't think of a gathering of 3 better 3-year-old sprinters, maybe ever, but certainly in several years. And then we also have the ballerina. John's best friend Gamine is going to be in there. Going to be a little bit awkward if Bob Baffert's there presenting him with the trophy in the winner's circle.
He won't show up.
Yeah, I think he probably won't either. But you know, the Sword Dancer, Aiden O'Brien is bringing Mogul and Japan, at least based on the probables, 2 real top horses over in Europe. Chad Brown's got a couple in there as well. Tribivan, who won the United Nations, is going to try to stretch that speed out to 1.5 miles in the Sword Dancer. Guffo's in there after a pretty troubled trip in the Manhattan. I'm just looking at the weather right now. It looks like it says 50% chance of some rain on Saturday, so I think, you know, I don't think turf races are gonna be in jeopardy. Maybe there'll be a little bit moisture in the ground. The Boston Spa is also Saturday, as well as the Forgo, which is gonna have Yaupon in there going 7 furlongs, which is a big time horse. I don't know what else you want for star quality on a Saturday at Saratoga. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I'm gonna start with the Travers. And you know, it's funny because we're talking about that. I don't think it's even the most electric race on the card.
No.
Especially with the Allen Jerkins, but it is what it is. And you know, I wouldn't knock it in any sense. They do have the best 3-year-old in the country. And really, other than Hot Rod Charlie, there's no one else out there. That whole division it just come down to those 2 horses at this point. So it looks like, well, actually Medina Spirit, who might get back into the mix sooner rather than later.
Is that when I see it?
Yeah. Well, but, you know, Hot Rod Charlie going on to the Pennsylvania Derby. But you hit the nail on the head, Joe. I think the Allen Jerkins is, I mean, just wow. And, you know, we haven't seen Life as Good in ages, and all this stuff has come down since then, now in the Todd Pletcher barn. But remember, you know, what we thought of this horse or the potential of this horse, and talk about throwing this horse to the wolves. And it's the right thing to do because this horse is that good.
And he's been off for a while.
Yeah. Now, I assume that because he's running the Alan Jerkins, this horse is not going to stretch out this year and will probably be going in the Breeders' Cup sprint. But I would just also assume that it'll come back next year. So we got a lot to look forward to there. But in following C and Jackie's Warrior, as you said, I mean, it's quantity is not huge, but quality is off the charts. And you know, again, we get back to the subject of horses never running enough. Latruska, I mean, she doesn't run 20 times a year. But at least she's out there running and they don't skip spots with her. So I think she's really admirable. And remember, you know, if Nick's Go at some point stubs his toe, she's, you know, kind of waiting in the wing still as one of the most likely horse of the year contenders. It would take the males to have nobody really come through here. But she's really fun, too. So I'm with you, Joe. And, you know, these cards, as they've gone more and more towards this, you know, you used to talk about you wish the Met Mile was still on Memorial Day. Well, you know, that would be great, but we're finding out that not only is this an exciting afternoon, but the bettors are just going crazy for these cards. I mean, the Whitney, where they handle $37 million, and obviously they'll handle a lot more than that in the Travers. So they almost become like, you know, kind of like Breeders' Cup-like days. So, you know, we hate to see, you know, matter of fact, as fun as Horologist was, that was the feature on a Sunday at Saratoga, a $100,000 stakes race with
some a restricted stake race.
Restricted. So, but it's worth it. It absolutely is. So, you know, I'm with you. I can't wait for Saturday.
And this just kicks off a big week of racing. I mean, we're talking about these races at Saratoga. Obviously, Charlestown has their big night Friday night with the Charlestown Classic and the Oaks. They're grade two and grade three, respectively. And they have, you know, six or seven different, you know, stake races going on that night. Arlington Park has a couple of juvenile races over the weekend. You mentioned all the races at Saratoga. And then, you know, Monmouth has three or four stake races coming up this weekend as well. And then you roll right into Labor Day and another great card, you know, across the country. But I just wanted to focus a little bit about the Charlestown Classic because you're talking about some older horses that you know, have some class. It's a mile and an eighth, so 9 furlongs, which usually equates to about 17 turns at Charlestown. So, you know, you really got to make sure you make a, you go straight for two strides, make a left, go straight for two strides, make a left.
A lot of lead switching going on.
Exactly. But you know, a good solid, you know, field. You got Warrior's Charge in there that got kissed up to win the Island, but before that won the Razorback. Noble Drama, who's made $700,000. Rushy, who won the grade two Pat Day. Informative, what would you know, a grade two race be without a Uriah St. Louis horse in there? You know, New York Traffic, who finished second, just lost by a nose to Authentic in the Haskell last year. Sleepy Eye Todd, who's made almost $2 million. Art Collector, who at one point we were talking about for all the big races. And then, you know, a couple other horses in here that have a shot. But it's, you know, top to bottom, it's a really great race for Charleston. I think they're kind of copying what Saratoga and some of the bigger racetracks are doing, where they're putting all of their big races on one card and saying, you know, come one, come all, we have a great card top to bottom. And that's what I think these racetracks need to do is have a showcase day or a showcase weekend like this, where, you know, this is their big race day. So have, you know, 25, 30,000 people come out and watch.
There'll be 25,000 people at Charlestown?
I think there'll be 25,000 people at Charlestown. They may not all be front side. They may be in the casino, but you know, it's going to be a big day for them. I know we tried to get a table because we're running in the Hilton.
This is why he cares so much about Charlestown. It all comes back to John.
Self-promotion. It's okay for you to self-promote your articles, but I can't self-promote my horses. All right, that's okay. We won't even talk about the fact that that Diabolic is undefeated right now. Won three races.
Well, the attendance of the entire meet at Charlestown,
right?
25,000.
Over under?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say over.
Again, if you're counting the casino, then definitely. Yeah.
No, okay. Exactly. No. I actually thought that the Kieran question about over under 1.5, that was a good question. What would you take?
Didn't you ask Kieran what he thought of the Charlestown card while you're at it?
Because
Kieran, I know you're not training anymore, but what do you think about this big card at Charlestown?
You laugh, but Saez is riding Art Collector. So.
Is he?
Yes, he is. See,
that's the thing. He's a hustler, man.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I see him on off days sometimes at like Finger Lakes. Like, he doesn't have to ride those horses, but he just loves to ride, I guess, and does well wherever he goes.
All right, wait, I wasn't done yet.
There's more Charlestown news.
No, back to Diabolic. We'll go back to the Woodbine that she's undefeated, now going to be the favorite in the Natalma. Okay, now I'm done.
Wait, the Natalma's the following weekend, isn't it?
No, the Natalma's like in 3 weeks.
So why are we talking 19th. About it?
No, because my horse won last weekend. We didn't mention it. That's why. You self-promotion, you said. You know, if Bill had anything to promote other than the show, and he'd be on here.
The Natalma is just one step on the way to next year's Charlestown Oaks for her, right?
You know, if God she can willing. Transfer to the dirt. God yeah. willing. Yeah. Hopefully it's one step away from the Breeders'
Cup. All right. That's enough cynicism. Yeah, we're happy goodness. For Charlestown. It's a nice card for sure.
Right.
Johnny, I know you're being serious, but yeah, I don't want to get too cynical here. We're happy for any track that has a big day and get some people Absolutely. To come out and get some big horses to come yeah. in.
Do so, you yeah. want Bill to talk about all the graded stake races at Fauner Park? Oh, you're done? Okay, yeah. back to you, Jeff.
We're still trying to get that sponsorship.
Hey, Sleepy Eyes Todd, your man won the Gus Fosselman, is it? Didn't he at Fauner Park?
Oh, now I got to put my glasses.
Wow, yeah. What a bunch of nerds! Yeah. on this
you,
show.
You can look it up. Since you're yes, so prepared,
I don't even know. So the highlight at Charlestown is Sleepy Eyes Todd, the winner of the 20,020. This was 20, a pay and pump. Remember, it's the pay and pump or something like that. Pay and pump, Gus Fosselman, whatever at Fauner Park. There you go, pal.
So, right. Bill, when you pass on from this world, are you going to want a stake race named after you?
No, absolutely no? not.
So we can so that way we can continue to talk about you.
Yes, unless they rename the Fauner Park race.
Well, they might. Yes. They might for horses that have been in a claiming race and or have had an Achilles tendon surgery.
Right. We'll name a race after Bill. We'll spell his name wrong, which I do a lot. Right. We'll call the Bill Finley Stakes.
Bill Finley Stakes, exactly.
But yeah, good for Charlestown and some races at Del Mar too. The Pat O'Brien on Saturday as well. But yeah. Most of our eyes will be on Saratoga, and I think a lot will be settled in a lot of different divisions this weekend and next weekend, and we could not be more excited for it. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by the Minnesota Thoroughbred Association's 2021 Yearling Sale, which will be August 29th at Canterbury Park after the Day of Races, which features a quality selection of yearlings from top Kentucky stallions like Tapperit, Race Day, Practical Joke, Cross Traffic, Wicked Strong. Regional yearling sales have proven to be a great source for affordable and classy future racehorses. You can learn more and download a catalog at minnesotabred.com. So that is this week. That's this Sunday, the Minnesota Thoroughbred Association's 2021 yearling sale. Get involved in Minnesota in general, but get involved at the sale for sure.
Flexibility, convenience, opportunity. Find your digital advantage in the Keeneland Digital Sales Ring. Backed by the most trusted name in thoroughbred sales, visit KeenelandDigital.com to learn more.
All right, so that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland, home of the world's yearling sale. Make plans to attend the Keeneland September yearling sale starting Monday, September 13th. You can get the catalog at theworldsyearlingsale.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Kieran McLaughlin, our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Ritz, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you so much for watching. And also thanks to the viewers and listeners. I realized I didn't thank you guys at the end of the 100. So a little oversight on my part, but obviously we always appreciate you guys watching and listening and all the support. We will see you next week.